Hi, I'm Katie Stone Perez, and welcome to today's episode of Level Up. I'm here with Tracy Fullerton, who's the director of USC Games. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Absolutely.
So this is actually an amazing opportunity to get to sit and chat with Tracy. Tracy, for those of you who aren't familiar with her, just has a tremendous experience in the game industry. She actually just won at GDC this year the Game Developers Choice Award as the ambassador. So congratulations on that award. So tell us a little bit about your background in the game industry.
Well, I started in the early 90s. Way back in the day. In fact, some of the earliest projects that I worked on were Laserdiscs.
Oh, wow.
If you can believe that, with branching narrative choice.
I actually didn't even realize there were games on Laserdiscs.
Yes, in fact, and we distributed them to theaters.
Oh.
So that was a partnership with Sony.
Okay.
And so I started, you know, early out trying to figure out some of the hard problems of game design, like how do you integrate narrative into a storytelling game, right? And then I also was super interested in how people play together. And I worked on some of the earliest multiplayer casual games.
Oh,
cool. For folks like, for Sony and actually for Microsoft, and then later on for MTV and other folks who were interested in bringing together really large scale groups of people in casual game environments. And this was kind of way before Facebook, actually. So it didn't hit really big until Facebook, but we figured out a lot of really interesting things about how people play together on the web.
Very cool. I know one of the interesting things for me is that as I'm out in the game development world, so many of my favorite games, like I end up talking to the creators. Like I was just talking with Matt Corbo over at the Odd Gentleman, right? And he was like, oh, I went to USC. And I'm like, oh my God, of course you did.
Love Matt, yes.
So it's so fantastic because the program that you have in place here is just amazing and has created so many talented alumni that have just created such amazing experiences. So I just want to say thank you as a gamer to get to experience all this amazing content.
We're really proud of them. I had a great experience just recently. I went to China and I was talking with a lot of the indie devs in Beijing, and they all were so excited, and what they kept calling me was Genova's teacher.
Because
Genova Chen from that game company.
Yep.
And they're like, oh, you're Genova's teacher. Can you be our teacher? Yeah, okay.
That's a pretty awesome title.
I was pretty proud. I was texting him. They call me your teacher.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
So one of the things we wanted to talk about today is I obviously, you know, get an opportunity to talk to a lot of indie game developers. And one of the things when we're having those conversations and we're talking about the game that they're making, they'll a lot of times tell me, well, I'm making the game that I really want to play. And I wanted to talk to you because you have so many students that come through, you know, the doors of your program. How do you help developers go from I'm making the game that I want to play to making something that they can actually take and market and actually make into a product that can be viable out there?
Well, first of all, it's obviously incredibly important to have passion for the work that you're doing. And I think that's what they're expressing. They're expressing that passion. And you never want to lose that. You never want to lose that passion. But becoming a mature designer also means being able to put yourself into the position of the intended audience, the players, right? So you have to remember that you're not making a game for yourself. You may be one of the players, but you're only one. You're sort of a, you know, sample of one. And so ultimately, you have to be making the game for your players. And so you have to understand who they are, and you have to go to them with your designs, and you have to have this iterative feedback loop so that you're not just making the game that you want to play. You're making the game that your audience wants to play. And I think that a lot of people assume they are the audience.
Yep.
And while, like I say, they may be one sort of, you know, sample of the audience, they are actually not the entire audience for their game. And if they are, then it's going to be a pretty small audience, and the game's not going to do very well. So you really have to break that that sensibility that the game is only for you, and you really have to push yourself. It's really hard to say, okay, I'm going to show my baby to someone else. I'm going to admit that I'm making my baby for someone else, right? But once you do make that leap, you get an incredible amount of information, and your passion is reinvested by the passion of your players.
I think that's so valid. You do start to see that feedback loop come into play. So when would you say people need to start having that thought process and conversation?
Right away. To me, that's the first thing you do. You really start, in my opinion, you start a game design with an inkling. And it's something that appeals to you, right? And you start a game, you have an inkling of an idea of an experience you want to create. And I think that honing that design of the experience, what is this experience? Who is it for? The minute you start answering those kinds of questions, that's your design process, right? And we were talking earlier, a lot of times what I see is young designers come to me, they say, I want to make, you know, a game like this, X. And then they go, and so I will make this game. They just jump from the game sort of inkling mm-hmm. to a solution. Mm-hmm. And what you do when you just have that direct line between inkling and solution is you actually don't involve your audience. Yep. And you may, it's true, make a really interesting, say, beginning prototype. But once you start having deeper questions, you don't have a strong experience goal to go back and test against. So that once you get into the deeper problems of design, you actually haven't done your foundational work, right? Yeah. So for me, it's really important. You start thinking about your audience. You start thinking about the experience, the arc that they're going to go through over the course of the game that you're making. Day one. Right after the inkling, yep. right after the spark in the shower that makes you go, oh, wow, I could do a game yeah. like X, right?
I so completely agree. I know we were talking earlier, and, you know, as a producer, I've had so many calls with partners where we kind of got on the, you know, call and we're starting our production process, and I say, well, what is that player's journey going to be? And they're like, oh, we haven't thought about that yeah. yet, you know, and we're still so trapped in kind of our coin-op mentalities of, you know, oh, we have to kill them because they have to put another coin in. But in this case, they've given us all their coins up front. They're, you know, committed to our experience. And in a lot of cases, we don't really think actively about what that success path looks like for them. And yet we expect them to buy our sequels. We want them to buy all our merchandising and things like that. But we don't actually actively craft out what that experience is.
Right. And that's not going to be true. They're not going to be invested in that universe enough to keep coming back unless you do have that detailed experience goal, that notion, the sort of those ups and downs and that arc of like, oh, what is going to keep bringing them back? Let's just say I play for 45 minutes. What's the sort of peak moment that I'm going to have yep. that's going to, once I have to shut down and go to dinner, bring me back? Yep. You know, what are those hooks in the journey? What is that emotional appeal in that journey that's going to keep bringing me back to the game, keep wanting me invest in the universe
yep.
and all of the ancillary parts of that universe?
Yeah, I know as a producer too, it's always been so important to me that we actually leave time in the schedule before we, you know, go into that march mode, right? Where you actually can find those little nuggets and go off on those explorations. And I hate to see any team kind of, you know, start marching forward too quickly and there's something there, but they just have to leave that glimmer there and just kind of march to the finish line. And I know it's so hard within game development. It's not like other software where you're like, oh, I'm building X, Y, and Z and I can right. just start executing, you know, code today for X, Y, and Z. Like, you have to give yourself that time to
wallow.
You
have to wander. You have yeah. to, you know, basically it's the difference between, you know, walking from point A to B and taking a interesting stroll through the forest. And I would say, you know, game development is about wandering through the forest.
So one of the questions I have is, you know, it is so important to have that user feedback. So how do you guys incorporate that into the curriculum here?
It's built in from day one. Okay. So even in the earliest design classes, you are creating a prototype. We have you play test. You get the feedback, and you have to bring in an iterative version of that design from the earliest versions. In the first classes, we actually separate out technology and design, and so you're working with paper prototypes
oh, awesome.
On the one hand, and then you're also
very cool.
working with learning your digital school skills. And then when you put those together in our intermediate class, we actually have a user research class that runs alongside, and the user research students
so
are
cool.
assigned to the intermediate, and also when you get to advanced, you have a user research lead on your project. And so what they do is they actually bring in playtesters that fit the market profile, and then they're going to test those games. They're going to bring that evaluation back to the team. They're going to discuss it. They're going to put in changes. They're going to do it again. They're going to do it through the semester. The goal is always to involve users in that process from the very beginning.
That's so cool. We're actually going to have another Level Up episode in just a few weeks, specifically talking about how to run your own usability testing for indie game devs. So I'm really excited about that one.
Yeah, and like I say, it's a really scary thing, right?
It is,
you know, I can remember.
I've seen devs like yelling through the walls, and I'm like, shh, it is a seat. Like, they can't see you, but when you yell, they will be able to hear you. Like,
we have that problem. Sometimes, obviously, there's laughter, you know, and it's nervous laughter, but the people in the room don't know it.
Yeah.
But, you know, the you have to get past that emotional block. You have this, you know, this is my creation. I know it's not done yet. This is what people are always saying to me. They always say, it's not ready yet. It's not ready yet, right? And I'm like, well, okay. If it's not ready, then you haven't done any design work, right? Because you can start testing beginning design work from almost day one.
Yep.
And that's why we start with paper prototypes, then we do rough digital prototypes, and we iterate on those prototypes, even, you know, into the final stages where you're actually testing more specific things, like, do they understand the process of this tutorial? Do they understand, you know, how these levels are sort of unfolding and teaching you the game design, right?
So how cool, so how long, I actually think starting on paper is perfect. I mean, even with my kids who are like, ooh, mommy, I have a new video game design idea, right? I'm like, roll of paper and just start, you know, I'll often go to brunch and come home and my daughter's like drawn out a whole like level design, which I think is so awesome. That's what happens when daddy's a game designer too. But, you know, so how long do you have people stay in that paper process or, you know, before they kind of move into the technical?
Well, every project is different, as we all know. Classes, we have a very short amount of time. So it's a 15-week process, right? So they're just the first week or so is going to be on paper, and then they're going to jump right into it. Now, on some of the research projects that we're doing here in the Game Innovation Lab, where we are today, there may be more experimental questions that we're asking. There may be, you know, we may actually take several versions of a design into be tested with several different audiences.
Very cool.
And that process may last a little bit longer. You know, for me, it's also not important that it remain purely paper or purely digital. Sometimes we have half and half prototypes. Sometimes you're just testing one thing, like one kind of inventory system, right? It's just a piece of the design. And a good prototype is not something you think is anywhere near a finished product. Good prototype simply has good questions that it's asking that can get you the answers that you need to proceed with the design.
And I think that's actually a really valid point too, which is, what questions do I need to ask now?
Yeah.
And how do I make sure that those things are addressed?
Exactly.
And then I'm asking those questions in a way, you know, after they've engaged with the experience to actually collect the right feedback. And to be open to the feedback, right?
Yeah.
Because it's not just tell me how awesome it was, right? But actually give me that constructive feedback so I can make it better.
It's so hard. I mean, and that's why we all understand that it's hard, but it doesn't make it less important just because it's hard. And you can't wait. You can't wait till it's perfect, because then you're too invested, you spent your resources, and you've made your decisions without information.
Yeah. So when you actually are doing all this prototyping, are you guys using Unity, or what kind of engines are a lot of your teams using?
We do use a lot of Unity. We also use Unreal. When we are prototyping, a lot of time it is actually Unity. But, you know, for mobile games, you might use HTML5 or something like that. It really depends on the project. And again, we use a lot of cards and a lot of, you know, just like we have drawers and drawers of trinkets that we use for creating our first draft.
Very cool.
Yeah.
So when you think about a common element that you see in a lot of your successful projects, like, what is it?
Yeah. It's kind of going to sound a little difficult to nail down. I can tell you more easily what the unsuccessful, you know, the common unsuccessful elements are. I don't want to, you know, harp on it, but a lot of the common unsuccessful elements are sameness. Right, so a kind of, I made a game like games that I like, right? And there's a sameness to, I think, unsuccessful games. And so that helps me to define what the common successful element is. And that is that however they've done it, and it usually involves some kind of personal connection to an idea, some sort of personal reference to the real world or other art forms or other things that have inspired them, that a project just has a sense of personality, right? Mm-hmm. And it's not, doesn't seem to be referencing other games in this endless mirror cycle of sameness. It actually sparks out and says, hey, I'm something new, right? You've never seen me before, yep. right? And when you see that, it's undeniable, right? And I think it's one of the reasons, you know, some student games have jumped out and become successful indie yeah. games, for example, because in the academic environment, you are freer to explore unusual ideas. You don't have a bottom line, at least at first, right? And you don't have, you know, usually you're not wasting anybody's resources. Yep. And you're sort of freer to just ask wild, crazy, impertinent questions in your design goals. And sometimes you come up with these sparks of ingenuity that sort of stand up and say, wow, play me.
Yeah, and that's actually one of the things I love so much about being in the indie game space is, yeah. like, most of my favorite games are all indie games, yes. right? Because it is that totally just fresh experience yeah. that I haven't engaged with before. So.
Although I will say that, you know, even in the indie space, there's a lot of sameness,
yeah.
you know, and we
Definitely.
All have, we have to acknowledge that. Yeah. And so that's when I say to my students, at least, I'm like, you got to push, don't think just because it looks indie and it feels indie that makes it unique. That's yeah. That's actually not unique anymore. It used to be, but
yeah.
now it's
yeah.
not,
yeah.
right? Now
it's
you
really
actually have
point.
To dig deeper, right? Your ideas have to come from someplace else. They can't come from playing other games. I mean, not all of them, but obviously we exist in a vocabulary of games, but the sort of core notion of it has to come from something unique and personal and related to life in a way that people are like, wow, I've never played that before. That's so amazing.
Very cool. I completely agree. So what's one of the things that you think is most important for a successful team to have?
Oh, yeah.
Or for a successful game to have?
Respect. So here's the thing. I think that people know when you are pandering to them. They absolutely have a bullshit meter, right? And, you know, so players want to be respected. And they don't want to be pandered to. They want to be respected, and they want to feel that a game has a meaningful choice that's really speaking to them, right? And you know what's interesting is it's the same for you ask about team and you ask about a game,
yeah.
and these are of course both different
yeah.
sides of the screen,
yeah.
you know, one on the making and one on the playing, but it's the same. Everybody wants to have respect. On a team, you want all the voices to be heard. Everyone wants to be able to be in a position to give their best. And, you know, dysfunctional teams are where you have a lack of respect.
Yep.
And a good, harmonious, hardworking team that's going to be putting all of their best work is one where they have respect for each other, they're listening to each other, where they're depending on each other, where they're building on each other's skills. And that's going to, I think, translate into a respect for the player. And it's all going to, you know, in the end, it's all going to be experienced in the game. You're going to feel how it was made and who it was made for.
Very cool. I think, you know, when I started my career in the industry, one of the things, I was in tests, right? And changes would be made and we'd be like, why are we doing that? It didn't seem like a logical direction.
Right.
And no one ever answered why.
Right.
So when I became a producer, I always made sure that every single major decision like that, we always communicated why.
It's so important.
And it's so amazing how people just will line up behind you as soon as you take the time to say why.
Exactly.
It's just a simple respect. It's so simple to do that. And
right.
yet it's like PM 101 to
yes.
do that. And yet it's something that I think a lot of teams miss. And I think it does lead to kind of a factoring of the team instead of
yes.
that cohesion behind a project.
And sometimes when I'm speaking to my students here and they're younger developers, they misunderstand me and think that I mean that we're all going to vote on ideas.
Yeah.
And that's not
yeah.
the case at all.
Yeah.
I actually firmly believe that, you know, leads and, you know, there's a hierarchy to it's a flat hierarchy, but there's a hierarchy to the design process that's a necessary hierarchy. But communication and respect, you know, allow you to have that hierarchical process where everyone is working efficiently together, but they're informed and they're part of the decision making.
Yep.
They're, you know, they feel like a sense of authorship. And to me, that kind of respect translate into a great product.
Very cool. Well, thank you so much for taking the time this week. I know it's E3.
So it's E3.
It's a busy, kind of insane, crazy week right now, but thank you so much for taking the time.
Absolutely.
Congratulations, and thank you, because you are just doing amazing work and helping create amazing new creators for the space.
Oh, so. Thank you.
Thanks so much.
All right, take care.